Howdy, kids. Welcome to another episode of Escaping the Cave. It is the one and only, the Toddzilla X-Pod. It's Todd. Hi. Record date on this one, I think it's number 129. April 8th of 2024. How you doing? Had a good week so far, I hope. Well, shouldn't say that. I'm only dropping this on a Monday morning, so who knows, right? It's Eclipse Day. Recording this in the early morning hours of April 8th. The total eclipse is coming up here, I guess, 12, 13 hours. Something like that. Oh, people are all abuzz. It's Armageddon. Did you see what Marjorie Taylor Greene posted to X last week about the that little earthquake that they had out there in New Jersey? She sounded like old Pat Robertson, man.
Oh, God might be punishing us with earthquakes and eclipses to let us know that he's not pleased with America.
Not to be outdone, there's a Green Party candidate somewhere. New Jersey, I think. What's going on with New Jersey? Anyway, she's in New Jersey, and she tried to connect the earthquake in New Jersey to... Do I need to even say it? Do I even need to say it? Yes. Climate change. Where is it at? I need to play this tonight. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get my my shit together and get back in the flow of this. But yeah, she decided she was going to try to connect an earthquake, tectonic activity deep below the earth, to fucking climate change.
How dare you?
She's a Green Party candidate. You know what her blurb said on her X profile? She's running to restore faith in government. That's the way to do it, huh? Everything is about climate change. Climate change is going to kill us in so many different ways, even with earthquakes. I couldn't anymore. I did go back on X. I got off of that platform. Oh, it's been a long time, at least a year. And I decided to go back to it, check it out, because Facebook is kind of delved into this maybe a little bit last week. Facebook has changed. As much as I complained about this platform 5 years ago, saying that it needed to change, it needed this, it needed that, it has done it. It's done something. I don't know if it's it. Maybe it's just my little tiny slice of the Facebook ecosystem. I seem to like the word ecosystem lately. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just the people that, the very few people that I associate with on that platform. It could be. But it's changed. All it is memes and people sharing reels, little video clips. Not even their own. Some people do. I do. My friend Corey, he moved down to, you remember Corey, he was on the show a couple of years ago. He moved down to Tennessee. Great story. I tried to get him on the show. I shouldn't say that. I was going to try to get him back in the studio on the show to talk about that. Because you know what this little ballsy motherfucker did? He decided he wanted to get out of Michigan. He wanted to live in Tennessee. He sold his house. He and his wife bought a camper. Bought land down in Tennessee. Undeveloped. No house on it yet. And they're living out of an RV, clearing the land on this mountainside in the eastern part of the state. I don't know what he's doing for work. I don't know what she's doing for work. But it sounded to me like he doesn't like to share a lot of stuff publicly. And I never really got a chance to talk to him. He got busy. But it sounds to me like they just up and left. Just took off, said, we are done with the state of Michigan. We're sick and tired of the way it's going. We want to go move to Tennessee. We'll figure the details out later. I absolutely love this. Considering my history, I have moved all over this country. I think I've lived in something like 14 states, went with no, you know, guaranteed prospects whatsoever. Now, we did this 20 years ago. He's doing this. Let's just say in the advanced stages of his youth. Balls. Huevos. And he's clearing his own land. They're going to build their house later. And when I figured out he was on his way out, because like I said, he doesn't give a lot of information. Right. So I figured when I found out it was getting to be short time, I was like, hey, dude, get a hold of me, because I wanted to talk to him about coming up, sitting in that chair over there and talking about this decision. Because at our age, to do that now, it's one thing to do it in your 20s, even your 30s. Right. But to do it in your 50s. I'm impressed. And he pulled it off. He's posted some videos. Like I said, he threw some little phone videos up on Facebook, showing him clearing the land, showing views of the landscape. Oh my God. Eastern Tennessee is fucking gorgeous, man. It is one of my favorite parts of the country, as long as you stay away from Asheville. Ugh. It's like these hippie enclaves in these states, like Austin, down in Texas. And Asheville, North Carolina, is not far from where he's at in Eastern Tennessee. Just stay the hell out of there. Wokistan. But yeah, in Santa Fe and New Mexico is the same way. Not completely. Yikes. Anyway, I was impressed with this. I really was. And I wanted him to come up, but then he never got back with me. He was like, oh, fuck you, Todd. And the next thing I know, they're down there. He posted some pictures last few days of him. Of his little, not him, but his little setup with the camper. It looks idyllic, man. It's the cure for erectile dysfunction, if you know what I'm saying, and I think you do. Well, props on you, Corey. I know you're still listening to the podcast. I did want to get you back up here to talk about that. I don't know what the hell your deal is. I would have made you some ribs and got some beer. You're going to leave me with Chad. I've talked to another friend of mine about coming up and sitting in on the show. We all kind of know each other. Chad, Corey, and I all graduated together. He and I have an interesting history going back and forth discussing politics, both in person and online. And I think it would be interesting to have him come up, sit across, and just see where we are now, because we were not on the same end of the spectrum 10 years ago. I've changed a little bit. My beliefs have evolved as the Democratic Party has devolved. I'd like to kind of have a decent conversation with him about some of this stuff, particularly his love for the Second Amendment. So we'll see. The studio's coming along. I've done quite a bit of work in the last 6 or 7 months on it, not just microphones. But I think, yeah, I'm going to try to get that done. I don't live in an area that's really conducive to getting a lot of guests in here anymore. We're out in the sticks, much more so. But Corey had been to the house. He wasn't that far for him before he moved. Jerk, he should have got back with me. If you're watching the video, I'm wearing my fancy little Oakland Athletics, Oakland A's t-shirt. There's a reason that I'm mentioning this. I'll get probably more into this later on, maybe today. The Oakland A's are leaving Oakland, and the owner has decided to move his team to Las Vegas. They're going to build a stadium, apparently, supposedly on the site of one of the casinos that I think they're tearing down. But it's not going to be done until... I think they're planning on opening in 20. See, that's what I'm talking about with that mic. Do you hear that? They're planning on opening in 2028. As I turn my head away from the microphone to say anything with the letter T, 2028. And Oakland, and this owner Fisher, I think his last name is. Boy, it's gotten contentious. They tried to get a stadium built in first, I think, in San Jose, and then they thought they had something established in the Port District in Oakland, something like that. Anyway, it fell apart. It might have been something to do with the environmental concerns. Anyway, it's really gotten nasty. So the lease is up, I think, after this year. Their stadium in Las Vegas isn't going to be open until 2028. Where are you going to play for the next few years, guys? You're all set. At the, it used to be the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. I don't know what it is now. And then it was Ricky Henderson Field. I don't know. Maybe it's a Trojan pit these days. Who knows? I really don't. But they were trying to get this together so that the A's could, stay at their current location. They were going to have to pay the city something. And they couldn't get it done. I don't know who's to blame. Maybe there's a lot of blame to go around. Anyway, the Oakland Athletics are going to be playing. Oh, Matt, you're going to love this. I'm sure you've heard about it in Sacramento. They're going to be playing in West Sacramento for three seasons. 25, 26, and 27 in a minor league stadium in West Sacramento, the home of the Sacramento, is it Rivercats? They're going to be playing baseball, Major League Baseball, Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, Shohei Ohtani. All of these ballplayers are going to have to fly into Sacra-fucking-mento and play at a minor league ballpark for the next 3 years. And that doesn't say anything about the poor people, these underprivileged Oakland A's. That's going to be their home for the next 3 years. It doesn't happen that way. It never happens that way. While they were building Yankee Stadium, or renovating Yankee Stadium, Yankees played Shea Stadium, I think. You don't see teams spending multiple years at a minor league ballpark. During COVID, the Toronto Blue Jays had travel difficulties. They had to play in Buffalo at a minor league ballpark. It wasn't great. The players did not like it. And these poor bastards have to do it for three. Who's going to sign to play in Sacramento? They're not signing free agents anyway. They've been having a hell of a time the last few years getting anybody to come and play in that decrepit ballpark up in Oakland. But at least that was a major league ballpark. Stands. A passionate fan base, believe it or not. I remember the Tigers played the A's in the playoffs. Like two seasons in a row. I know they played them in 06 in the championship series. And their fans remind me of what I saw down in León in Nicaragua. They're having fun. They're beating on drums. The ones who showed up, they were passionate about that team when it was competitive. They're decent fans. Some of the most interesting, I can tell you that. Well, they're the ones that are getting completely screwed here. So they organized a boycott for opening day. And I flipped over to watch the game. There was hardly anybody in the stands, maybe 2,000 people. Maybe. They had a bunch of people out in the parking lot boycotting, saying, hey, we love our team, but we're not going to give you any money. We'll hang out in the frickin' parking lot while the game's going on. So, sorry, Oakland. You got hosed. You're getting hosed. This is going to... And Sacramento, come on. Really? How many middle fingers do you have? Sacramento. The Oakland Athletics. The Athletics team. The reason I got the shirt, I've been an Oakland fan. Not an Oakland fan. I don't like the city of Oakland. But I like the Athletics, the A's. Even with the New York Yankees and their history, the St. Louis Cardinals have a bunch of titles. The Athletics franchise is probably the most interesting in all of baseball if you take the totality of their history. They were the Philadelphia A's for a long time. This is Connie Mack's team, Shibe Park. The history of Shibe Park is really interesting. It's the first spite wall ever built so fans couldn't want you know, the deal with Wrigley Field, right? How they get on the roofs and they used to be able to watch the games, and then the ownership wanted to, you know, charge admission so they weren't watching it for free. Well, the owner of the A's, was it Connie Mack? I'm not 100% sure. Again, didn't research it. This is just a tangent. But they had a short right field in a situation similar to Wrigley Field in Chicago, right? They had residential areas with these buildings across the street in right field. And it was a low fence, even lower than Wrigley Field, I think. So these folks could just be hanging out their windows, hop up on the roof, and watch the Athletics play at Shibe Park. Well, the ownership didn't like that, and they built this huge fence. Like this big wall right behind the outfield fence. No stands out there. Nothing. Just a big, ugly fence. A middle finger to the fans across the street because, well, we're not going to let anybody watch the game if they're not buying a ticket. Ty Cobb played for the Tigers. Everybody knows he's a Tiger, you know, baseball fan. A lot of people don't realize he went to the Philadelphia A's after he left the Tigers. Connie Mack built a pennant winner in Philadelphia. Jimmy Fox, you've got all sorts of just like Lefty Grove, I think, played out there. Eddie Collins. I mean, some legendary names in baseball. And had the first fire sale. He didn't want to pay him. He didn't want to give him the contracts. And he's like, screw it. Now I'm going to make more money just by selling these players. He just got rid of them. And then rebuilt it again. Mickey Cochran played for the A's before he went to the Tigers. It's a fascinating franchise. And then at some point in the 1960s, I think, attendance got to the point where, you know, nobody was going. Already got the Phillies in town. And then they decided to pick up and move. This was the first time the A's moved and went to Kansas City, became the Kansas City A's. That was the franchise, I think, that drafted Reggie Jackson. They built a contending team in Kansas City just in time, just a few years later, to move to Oakland. Late 60s, early 70s. They won three straight World Series, or were in three straight World Series, at least, in the early 70s. The Beards, this was the team that you hear about, the players that just hated each other and liked to fight each other, but still were good enough to go out and compete and win titles, win championships. Raleigh Fingers, Sal Bando was on that team, Catfish Hunter before he went to the Yankees. I mean, this team was Charlie Finley. He was the owner. He's got it in his own biography. He's right up there with George Steinbrenner. It's one of the more controversial owners in baseball history. Bill Veeck. Charlie Finley was notoriously cheap, started pissing everybody off, and then free agency hit. He's like, no, this ain't happening. Holdouts. Just interesting. Then Ricky Henderson came along in the late 70s through the 80s. They kind of struggled early on, put together another powerhouse team with Canseco, Mark McGuire, Dennis Eckersley, Dave Stewart. My two guys, Weiss and Gallego, got a nice story. I'll tell you about them sometime. Just a deadly team. Carney Lansford, Tony Phillips, future Tiger, played second base for that team. This is, again, team that won championship, went to the World Series. They played the Dodgers in that 88 series that everybody sees the home run by Kirk Gibson. They were in the 89 World Series against the Giants when the earthquake hit at Candlestick Park. A fantastic franchise. Then you come into the early 2000s. They're the Moneyball team. The most interesting, unboring franchise, I think, in all of baseball. They're sort of the bastard A's. Because this is going to be the fourth city. The fourth city that they're going to occupy, hopefully, as the Athletics. Hopefully with the green and yellow. I hope they keep that name. I really do. But if you're a baseball person, if you're a baseball fan at all, even you're sort of kind of getting into it and you really want something interesting to kind of research, read about the Athletics, highly recommend. One other interesting note about the Athletics, the A's. Since I'm personalizing this podcast for one specific part of the state, if you're down around Hiltucky, there's a guy buried in Pittsburgh who played for Connie Mack and the Philadelphia A's in the first decade of the 20th century. He was a pitcher, I do believe. He actually did pretty well. I think he might have won 20 games or I forget. Again, I'm on a tangent, so I didn't go, and I'm having a really hard time digging his name out of my brain. It's not always top of mind. So what I think I'll do is I'll look him up when I get done, and maybe I'll put his name in the show notes. If you see a random name down there, that's who it is. Yeah, you got a guy who played for that franchise, and he did pretty well and played with a lot of legendary baseball players. Rube Waddell, I believe. He definitely played for Connie Mack. There are a lot of those really interesting old-time ball players that pretty much everybody has forgotten about. There's a guy from Allen who played in the major leagues like in the teens, maybe? Teens or 20s, I forget. I don't even remember his name, but he was born in Allen. Jonesville has one guy, Jim Lewis. His claim to fame was giving up a grand slam to Ryne Sandberg. I think there's a guy or two maybe from Quincy. But yeah, I've always had a huge fascination with these guys because, like I said, they got there. And this was, you know, before all the television coverage and big money and all this stuff. And then they got up there. Maybe they got their little cup of coffee, didn't stick, didn't perform well, whatever. And people pretty much forgot who they were or that they ever played Major League Baseball. I find that fascinating. Really interesting. It's like this little nugget buried in the graves with these people that I would love to hear about. I'd love to hear the stories. I'd love to find out what happened with that guy who's buried in Pittsburgh, why he washed out of the major leagues, and what you probably find out what he did afterwards, but what led to it. Tell me a story about you and Connie Mack. Did Connie Mack cut you? You know? It's just, it's really too bad. I wish there was a way to bring all of these stories to life. Beyond anecdotes, beyond the, you know, maybe the family legends. But yeah, I got a kick out of finding that out. Dude from Pittsburgh played for Connie Mack. Anyway, this may seem like a lot of baseball to you. There's more coming. That's the Toddzilla X-Pod part of this. I think I said I was going to explain it. Might as well do it now, right? Since I'm already off on this tangent, what I'm going to do is I'm going to break this podcast up. Two names. I'm going to keep it Escape in the Cave. I think that's going to be the banner. Just keep it that way. But occasionally, I think, I don't know how often, I don't know what ratio I'm going to do. But occasionally, at least, I'm going to do a podcast that has nothing to do with propaganda, doesn't have anything to do with politics, just stuff that I'm interested in. And one of those topics, one of those subjects is going to regularly be baseball. I had a baseball podcast a few years ago. A lot of you may remember that. I tried it, and boy, I didn't want to have to work to get another podcast off the ground, to be honest with you. And, you know, marketing a baseball podcast is worse than dealing with political critters on social media. Believe it or not, it is. I didn't want to deal with it, and I was more concerned about the other podcast at that point in time. But, you know, after watching a few other podcasters, listening to Joe Rogan, he doesn't have a theme. He doesn't have a topic. He's got a hell of a Rolodex, and he lets the Rolodex determine what he's going to talk about. But he doesn't have, he's not niche. He's not shoved into some box. Why should I be? I can do anything I want. Nobody's paying me. I don't have a format. I'm going to do that. So I think how I'm going to denote these is the Escaping the Cave stuff will probably just be what I've been doing with the podcast since it started. Politics, propaganda, human nature, psychology, all that kind of stuff. And then the stuff that's labeled with the little picture of, you know, the X, Toddzilla X, the old moniker. That'll be whatever the hell I decide. I'll just put it in the title. Why not? Do I have something to lose? Am I disappointing you? Have I let you down? That's the plan for right now. It'll be fun for the video end of this as well. Won't really make a difference. Little sections, little segments that I can upload to various places. So that's the plan for at least right now. You've been listening at least semi-regularly for the last few years. You know that I'm a Joan Didion fan, and her status as one of my very favorite authors only continues to rise. Deceit and self-deception are so prevalent, ubiquitous really, for a reason. The question has become why. And over the winter, I read her book, The Year of Magical Thinking. It's one of her most famous. It's about the death of her husband and how it affected her grasp of reality. She decided to write a book detailing what she went through, sort of analyzing it. Also, over the last year, I've been very slowly picking through a couple of books by Robert Trivers. Now, he's an evolutionary biologist who specialized in deceit in various species, not just human beings, other species as well. It's not something that's unique to human beings. And I did all this as an exercise in trying to understand and make friends with this self-induced brain tumor that I've given myself. Trying to figure out people, trying to figure out the propaganda angle of this, trying to understand it. So as I said last week, so as not to be so contemptuous, there is a reason we are the way we are. The evolutionary side of this is very important to understand. As far as I'm concerned, that's the only way forward, because ain't nobody fixing this. I'm sure as hell not going to fix it. I doubt you are. And I doubt we're really going to be able to get through to anybody to really even point out why it's or that it's there, let alone we may be able to get through to a few people, maybe understand why, maybe be able to share that with a few people. But en masse, no. Good luck with that. So now we ain't fixing it, but we can try to understand it, I think. And maybe there's some use that'll come out of that. As far as Joan Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking, proved to be one of the most honest, blunt, and self-aware things I've ever read. I also have a collection of her essays. The title, We Tell Ourselves Stories in Order to Live. That's what she called this collection of essays. It's the title of it, Stories. They're narratives, fictions. We still largely live in the magical land of make-believe. For some of us, these stories are black ruminations. They're horror stories, told over and over again, that paint and poison every mundane detail of everyday life, and oftentimes lead to depression. Rumination and depression are very, very closely linked. A direct line can also be drawn from these obsessive ruminations to political fanaticism, where every social imperfection screams injustice and is the fault of one externally manifested devil or another. Again, there is a path to empathy here. And again, it runs through the jungle of collective self-awareness. Something I'm working on, something I've been batting around in my head for a really long time, is The Sopranos, the TV show. This started 25 years ago this year, 1999. One of my favorite characters in that show is AJ. Around 2003, 2004, whatever seasons those were, I think it was right around the fifth season, maybe the fourth, but I think it's the fifth and then into the sixth season. He's starting to watch the news. He's reading Al Jazeera. He's got CNN and the Iraq War on all the time. He's turning into a bit of a political junkie. There's indications that he's an environmental fanatic, or at least wearing the feathers of one. But in that show, he starts to descend into hopeless depression because of his obsession with everything that's wrong with the world. Everything is going on. Why can't we just have peace in the world? Why are we like this? Why does all this stuff happen? The show was ahead of its time. Now, Jonathan Haidt is trying to tie some of the stuff with social media to that same kind of ruminating depression, but whoever wrote these episodes of The Sopranos had picked up on something well before social media. I think this was before Facebook was even founded. I don't remember any MySpace references or allusions in that show when it came to AJ. But he found something. You know, he found the existential pit of despair, the abyss, right? What's this all for? Teenage angst. And then he got funneled into political activism, focusing, ruminating on everything, every little thing that's wrong in the world, out of your locus of control. And he, in the show, fell into this pit of depression. Spoiler alert, in season 6, he tries to drown himself in the pool. Tony comes home, finds him, rescues him. He didn't really want to die. He didn't realize he didn't want to die until he was underwater, the cinder block tied to his foot, but, and Tony knocked him home, he's dead. But this all seems to start, it all seems to be fueled by these negative ruminations, in his case on politics, the environment, the Iraq War back then, and leading into this depressive abyss. I was laying in bed the other night thinking about this. This is what I think about at night. Believe it or not, maybe I need help. But I'm thinking about this the other night in bed, and I start to think, because this has been batting around in my head. There's other things with The Sopranos where they really caught on to something early on, long ago. I mean, again, starting in 1999. But if you follow the two kids, their story arc, it's the embryo of what we're experiencing today. Meadows' character is fascinating in and of itself. She was woke 25 years ago. Toward the end of the series, you see him sort of growing out of this, starting to grow out of this obsession. It's the best TV series ever made. But beyond just the Tony Soprano storyline and the rest, the kids in that show are fascinating to me. Whoever wrote those shows, I'm not an aficionado, but I commend them because they definitely picked up on something we are still experiencing today to the nth degree. The natural progression of this. Anyway, I'm in bed thinking about this the other night, and it's a clear parallel with his obsession with everything that's wrong in the world, his obsession with every injustice to what we're seeing today with the woke plague, the woke mind virus, as some people have begun calling it. I like it. These people are always obsessing on every little thing that's possibly wrong. Whether it's wrong or not, whether it doesn't even matter if it's really anything that's wrong. What matters is that it can be seen as wrong. And it doesn't even have to happen now. It doesn't even have to be anything that's happening in contemporary times. They will go back and retroactively prosecute everything that has ever been wrong anywhere in their determination, their righteous judgment. Now, could this possibly have something to do with the rates of depression skyrocketing with the advent of social media? This negative rumination, ruminating on everything that is possibly wrong. Every little minute imperfection in the world is something to be upset about, something to be offended with. Is it possible that that has something to do with skyrocketing rates of depression? I know something about this personally. Remember last week I said that you don't really find everything out. I don't tell you everything. Trust me here. I understand these horror stories and I understand negative ruminations. I understand what they do. I understand how they corrode your mind and poison your outlook and your sense of hope. I also last week talked about gratitude. Being thankful that things are as good as they are. This is also tied into fear. There's a connectivity, there's a connection here, a cognitive connection with fear. Imagine you're going to go do something. I'll just use my own example. Let me go back. Let me just strike that. I'll use my own example. I have talked about how long it took me to go from conception to actually getting in my backpack and head out hitchhiking, right? Fear. And it's a mindset. It's an attitude. For that 4 years, between the time that I came up with this concept and the time that I was basically pushed out, everything that could go wrong was what was playing over and over and over and over again.
I could run out of water. I could get kidnapped. I could get hit by a truck.
All these things I thought of. Over and over and over and over and over again. Ruminating on what might go wrong. Making these mountains out of what immediately proved to be within an hour of actually being out in it. 4 years of mountains turned in 10 minutes into molehills that, you know what, you just figure it out. It's not that hard. It's not that bad. The flip side of this is hopefulness. And you could take this too far as well. I know a lot of people that do. Where you only think about the good things, the possibilities. Right? I could end up in Mexico. I could end up at Machu Picchu. I could end up crossing Africa. I could end up taking this boat ride or this hike around the Black Sea. This is one of the ideas I had. Dreaming. Seeing the possibilities rather than the horror stories of what could happen versus what could happen. What could happen? Or what could happen? It's a matter of perspective. It's a matter of attitude. It's the correspondence between gratitude and obsessing on everything that's wrong. Does that make sense? In other words, looking around and experiencing what I experienced when I came back from Mexico every single time. I am so glad that I live in this country. I am so glad that I can walk to the store and get what I need. I'm so glad. Now, the roads that we drive on, yeah, they're not perfect, but they're better than those. I'm so glad I don't live in Nicaragua. I'm so glad that I, at least for now, crossing my fingers here, at least for now, don't have to worry about the government watching everything that I do and everything that I say online. I don't have people warning me to watch out what I say in my emails home because the government, the Sandinistas, might be listening and they might have something to say about it. I don't have to worry about police corruption to the degree that Chris had to worry about it when he was robbed at gunpoint at his hostel down in Peru. The dentist experience that I had in Peru. I think I cut that out of the last podcast. Maybe I'll throw it up as a video because I've got the footage. But even the dentist experience that I had in Peru when I had to have this tooth yanked got infected when I had the work done down there. I'm thankful that I have access to the dentists that I have up here now. As he was a high-end dentist in Peru. Well, everything isn't perfect, I understand that. But it's a hell of a lot better than it is in every country that I traveled to, Latin America. We have it really good here. So instead of obsessing on every perceived, oftentimes subjective, injustice, instead of only obsessing on that, like AJ, and sending yourself into an enraged, outraged, potentially depressive pit of despair and radicalization, anger-fueled radicalization, agitation, extremism, searching for that magic religion, that Messiah, who will fix the world and make it perfect so one day you won't be able to find anything wrong with the world. All injustices will be cured. Maybe take some time, a little bit of time, here and there, to appreciate what's actually here. How good we have it. How lucky you are that you don't have the concerns, the need, the necessity to fight for, that you have time to devote to every subjective injustice being thrown your way. By your phone, by social media, by your choice of ideological megaphones. I did a piece last week. You didn't see it. I haven't uploaded any of it, but I did it. I should just upload it. Maybe I'll do that. But I found a wonderful example of just how far we have come in the last 40 years. All these people that say, oh, we haven't made any progress at all. We're still just as racist as bullshit. We have made incredible progress in this country. On that front, on every other front. 100 years ago, could women even vote? Hate to break it to you. Women didn't seize the right to vote. They were granted the right, guess what? By white men. If white men didn't agree, yeah, it was time women should be able to vote. You wouldn't have voted. You still wouldn't be voting. A bunch of white men did the same thing in the 1960s with the Civil Rights Act. Nobody seized it. Martin Luther King made himself visible. And believe me, I respect the hell out of Martin Luther King still. This is another thing. See, Martin Luther King cheated on his wife. He wasn't perfect. Oh, let's be upset. Great example of what I'm talking about here. He was imperfect. He raised awareness, I guess, about the civil rights issue, but in the end, it was Lyndon Johnson who signed that bill, a white man. Congress. Is there anybody but white men in Congress at that point in time? And we haven't made any progress on race in this country from the founding. Come on. Yeah, that's the narrative. That's what a lot of these jagoffs want you to believe. And they will find any excuse, any example they can to reinforce that narrative. Because that's what they are programmed to do. Obsessive rumination on the negative, the imperfections. As a demonstration of how everything is imperfect, therefore immoral, therefore needs to be torn down and rebuilt again. The counterbalance and the cure for that, again, I go back to my example, is gratitude. Being thankful for the things that are really good in your life, or really good in the place you live. Focusing at least a little bit on the positive. And making a habit out of seeing it, appreciating it, not taking it for granted, understanding that it could be a whole hell of a lot worse, that a whole lot of people have it a whole lot worse than you do, and that you could too. You could be there by the grace of God, goes me. However that goes. There, but by the grace of God, goes me. People who have been diagnosed with a terminal disease, understand this. This happens a lot to people who have their mortality thrust upon them. All of the bullshit, all of the complaining, all of life's little imperfections, things that do not matter, fall by the wayside. They let go of the bullshit. They focus on things they enjoy. They surround themselves with the people and things that are important to them. They appreciate what time they have left and will not let anything pollute that. I've been fascinated with the psychology, the emotional reaction, the real life reaction of people who have been diagnosed with things like cancer. During my time off, someone who was very close to my wife and I died of breast cancer. And she was a perfect example of this. She did what she enjoyed. She found passion. She found life. She found the energy to do what she loved. To be fair, she was kind of like that before she got sick. I've seen this with other people too. What happens? Mortality. Time becomes precious. How you spend it becomes more precious. You see how you're wasting it on bullshit. It's a really fascinating thing. I remember it was about, this was probably, I think it was probably 2009, 2010. I was on my computer in the middle of the night. I don't know how I got here. I went down one of those internet rabbit holes, right? And I found this website. It might have been Caring Bridge. I know that's one of them. But I found a website that was hosting the journals, the blogs at that time, of people who had cancer. And I found a couple of them. I wrote about it on the blog that I was doing at that point in time. I remember one of their names was Brittany Barzee, B-A-R-Z-E-E. I went back and I started reading the blog post that she was putting up as she was fighting breast cancer. And they were so raw. They were so real. She was young. This girl was like 20, maybe 21, diagnosed with breast cancer at 21. And the anger and the rage. Why me? Feeling like your life has possibly been just taken away from you at that age. Rage. Ugh. Can you imagine? I couldn't. And I kept reading and I kept reading and I kept reading. Then I got closer to the end. She was getting weaker. She was having a hard time doing things. And I seem to remember the last post was that she was in the hospital and she had decided that she wanted to go home and spend time with her cat rather than being poked and prodded in the hospital. I think her mother, some family member, posted that for her. She didn't post it. I think she had gotten to the point where she couldn't or didn't want to do it anymore. And that was that. Next post was announcement that she died, information on her service. But I was sitting there just floored, in tears, really, reading this. Because the depth of feeling, the authenticity, the stripping away of the bullshit and a lot of the stuff that I talk about in this podcast, when she was diagnosed with this disease and when it became real to her, she understood what was important. It's not unique to Brittany Barzee. This happens to a lot of people who get terminally ill. They are, to me, for me, they exemplify what Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote about in one of his essays about tilling your own soil. In other words, forget about everything else. Till your own soil, meaning whatever is important. Take care of your own shit instead of worrying about everything outside of your control. Instead of worrying about the things you hate, trying to make the world a perfect place for everybody, you. Instead of indulging and filleting your messiah complex and saving the world for everybody else, start with yourself. It's another Jordan Peterson thing too, right? Clean your own room. But people who get ill, people who get seriously ill, and have their mortality thrust in their face. They understand this better than anybody. They have lessons to teach. Valuable lessons. And we understand this too. I mean, we don't have to get sick to understand this. If somebody we really care about dies, a lot of people go through this as well. A lot of people who were friends with these people understand in the immediate aftermath of that loss, they get a glimpse of this by having something taken away. Mortality, again, thrust in their face. Regret. Wishing they'd had more time. Wishing they'd done this. Wishing they'd done that. Or not done this or that. It's a temporary thing, I think. Usually, not always, but I think it usually is a temporary thing. When someone close to us, someone we care about dies, we have that realization, that enlightenment moment, but it usually fades. It's happened a couple of times to me in the last 10 years. My friend Ed, 5 years ago. 5 years ago, oh my God, is it this week? Oh, maybe next week. I had to look that up. Yeah, I mean, I had it. I was like, oh, well, I wish I would have went and seen him. I wish I would have spent more time down there. I wish we would have stayed in touch. I would have this, that, and the other thing, this, that, and the other thing. And it lasted for a couple of weeks, I guess, maybe. But gradually, we fall back into the habits most of the time. Not always. But when you're the one who gets ill, when you're the one experiencing your own mortality, that can be life-changing. And if you have access to those people, if those people, first off, if they have the resources to want to share that with somebody else, because this could be an intensely personal thing you don't want to talk to anybody else about, understandably. But if they do and you have access to those folks, the lessons are profound. That's what I was getting out of that, out of those blogs. Their raw feelings. They weren't talking to anyone else. They weren't putting on a show for anyone else. They were just putting it out, getting it out, writing it out to whoever read it. It really hit me. I mean, it There was another story, another example of this. I found her the same night. And she was angry to the end. She had a young kid. And this girl was, I think she was probably 28, breast cancer again. Her last message on that thing said something to the effect of, it is what it is. Fuck cancer. That's the last thing she put on there. Actually, it was better than that. It said, some people don't tell me, God, I probably should go look this up instead of doing it an injustice. But it said something like, she was just angry. And it says something to the effect, everything happens for a reason, huh? Tell that to my son who's going to be motherless. Fuck cancer. I do know that fuck cancer was the last thing she put on there. She died. And to me, it, I don't know. But that's knowing what's important, not focusing on the bullshit, and having a sense of gratitude for the time that's left so you can enjoy it. I know it's a stretch. I know I'm kind of all over the place with this, but the negative ruminations, and it's the flip side of the coin being gratitude. Ruminating on every single thing that's wrong and ignoring the things that are right will lead you into a pit of depression, self-righteousness sometimes, if you have that messiah complex that you think it's your job to save the world and everyone in it. Extremism. At very least, depression. Everything is painted black. And some people can't help it. Some people need medication. It's difficult. I think a lot of people, I know I was this way. I built this habit up. But no, that's not true. I wasn't always like that. When I was traveling, I wasn't like that. So, yeah. Maybe it has something to do with electronic eyes, the cave thinking that I've talked about on this show before, getting out of the real world, having real world interactions with actual people instead of letting your online interactions paint the entire world's picture for you. This contorted funhouse mirror reflection of the virtual, not the real, the virtual world. What people say online, or what the news is saying, what these agenda-filled news stories that I talked about last week are telling you, how they're presenting things, how they're framing things. Getting out and experiencing the world as best you can in the first person. That's what did it for me. And I was really bad about being able to sustain that. I'd get out a couple of months, 3 months at a time. And come back. This is what Chris was talking about. I'd come back and I would fall into this pattern where I'd be writing all the time. I'd be online doing my blog, whatever. And he'd see the change in me. I just went from this positive sort of, you know, guy out living my life to this cave dweller who just pissed off about it. But that was all that was coming in. That was what I was focusing on. And I've fallen into that pit a little bit with this podcast. I can show you the books back here. None of this is really positive shit. None of this makes me feel good about human beings. It's focusing on the negative all the time. And you wonder why I take 3-6 months off? It's like swimming around in sewage. I've used that analogy before. I know I have. I realize I'm all over the place with some of this today, but I'm going to take this back to the beginning. When I was talking about that Tonzilla X pod, doing other things, talking about things that I actually enjoy talking about, things that make me feel positive. One of those things, and I've talked about this before, is space exploration. The adventurous spirit. Human beings have always been explorers. That, I think, in my opinion, not just my opinion, a lot of other people's opinions, that explorer mentality, that adventurous spirit, that get up and go just because it's there, because no one else has done it, because it's fucking hard. Let's go. Or die trying. That spirit, I think, is the best trait humanity, human beings, Homo sapiens have. And it's been there from the beginning. I discovered back in December, January, I knew this a long, long time ago. But when I would go on these kicks of reading, moving away from the psychology, the propaganda, human nature stuff, the human ape stuff. And I'd start reading adventure stories. Mayflower book was one of those. I just wanted to delve into the adventurism of what it would take. What kind of human, listen to my voice. Not affecting this. You hear it? But yeah, what kind of human being? What would it take? Put yourself in the minds of these pilgrims, these religious fanatic pilgrims who got on a leaky boat, the Mayflower, and sailed someplace to carve out an existence in the middle of a fucking frontier with basically no way home once that ship left. What would it take to do that? I love that. And we have been doing that since the beginning of time. If you believe in evolution, if you don't, if you're a creationist, you're not going to like when I talk about this stuff. Sorry, deal with it. But that spirit, that drive, to climb the next hill, to see what's there, see if it's better than what's here, has been in our blood, programmed in our DNA from the beginning. That's how, if you believe in evolution, we left East Africa a long time ago. We're all colonists. We're all colonizers. We are a colonizing species. What, you think the Indians just grew out of the ground like maize? No. Those poor Indians colonized North America across the Bering Strait. What were they going to do? If they had crossed the Bering Strait, come south maybe to, I don't know, Utah, and found somebody else there, were they just going to say, oh, do you own this? We'll turn around and go home. Sorry, no. And it took it from them. They may have done exactly that. You don't know. They colonized North America. Then they decided. They didn't believe in land ownership. Then one day, they ran into some new people who did. And decided they'd take it from them. Oversimplification, obviously. But people have been colonizing since the beginning of time. We are a barbaric, tribal, warlike species. This is where that stuff really comes into play. Once you start understanding that, then you can look at the exploration stuff, the history of mankind, and it starts to make a little bit more sense. We're a mix of good and bad. We're imperfect. I've talked a lot about the bad stuff. I want to focus on some of the good stuff. And exploration is some of the good stuff. I get excited when I talk about this. I get excited when I read about it. Shackleton. Endurance. Yeah. Stanley and Livingston. Dugard has a wonderful book, Into Africa. I've talked about that book before. I read it again, and I got just excited reading that book the second time as I did the first. I downloaded David Livingston's journals, his Africa journals, all of them, downloaded them on my Kindle. They're amazing. I learned some things about slavery, the slave trade, that you didn't learn in school. Learn it from David fucking Livingston. Stanley, too. I love this stuff. This goes back to some of the stuff that I talked about last year as far as my ancestors and being sick and tired of being told that I should be ashamed of my adventurous ancestors. I don't think so. So that's one of the things that I'm going to talk about in this podcast. I'm going to try to balance it out a little bit more with stuff that excites me, and exploration, and particularly space exploration, because that is looking forward. That's looking to the next step. It's only natural. We are going. Eventually, we're going to have to. I'm also going to talk a little bit about baseball, because I enjoy baseball, and next to this stuff, actually, I may know more about baseball than I know about this stuff. I'm like a baseball rain man to a lot of people. I should be talking about that. And a few other things. But there needs to be a counterbalance to this stuff for me. I want to talk about something I enjoy. Not just something that, again, takes me down this negative rumination road, this pit. Need something to balance that out. Something I'm grateful for as opposed to something that's just, you know, always focusing on the negative. Exploration and adventure. Jesus, people like Magellan. Yeah, that does it for me. Things like SpaceX, that does it for me. Just read a book on the Voyagers. The history of the Voyager probes. I mean, it's 10 years old now, that book is. You know, I could update that myself, knowledgeable enough about it. But hearing about the history of how it got going, how it got started, some of the financial conflicts they had with getting funding, and the things it found, it's incredible to me. It's still going. We're still in contact. Voyager 2, Voyager 1's having some problems. Corrupt data. They think they might be able to fix it. But either way, I mean, they're probably going to go dead, go silent here in the next couple of years. And those things are going to be flying. They're going to be going in the same direction out there for millions of years. They don't degrade out there unless they slam into a comet or an asteroid or maybe a planet or a sun that we're not aware of. Maybe. But odds are that those things will be going in that direction, moving at that speed for up to something like a billion years. Think of it. Where that thing's going to go. It's got that record on there. It's an archive. It's sort of an artifact of who we were in 1977. Heading out across the Milky Way. But it'll never leave the Milky Way. It's never going to get to Andromeda. It's amazing. The scales of distance that we're talking about here. It'll go billions of miles, billions of years, but it's always going to be circling a super black hole at the center of the galaxy. It doesn't have escape velocity to leave our own galaxy. Fascinating shit. It gets me excited. Makes me enthusiastic. I need that. Everybody needs that. I'm going to take my own goddamn advice. Instead of ruminating constantly on things that are wrong, I'm going to find some things that are right, and I'm going to regurgitate them your way. If you'd like to listen, you're cordially invited. Yeah, I don't really want to do all this tonight. And that tangent went entirely too long. I haven't even touched the stuff that I meant to get to today. I think I did a paragraph when I started talking about Diddy it. Honestly, this podcast, this particular episode may be a useless pile of junk, but lots of times when I've thought that, once it's uploaded and I listen to it, I'm like, hey, that might be pretty cool. All right. Whatever. Hope I didn't disappoint you with this one. But I've got this all queued up. Ready to go. Not even going to move the stack of papers the next couple of days. And I'll dive headlong into it next time. We're not going to move completely away from these ruminations. The negative. There's a word for what you become when you do that. I'll never be that. But we'll see. Escape of the Cave podcast. You can check me out at Substack. I've got some videos up at YouTube. I have some more video clips from this episode, maybe the last one up there. Eventually, I'm not going to make it a priority as of yet. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. If you like it, share it. And check it out next time. Till then, so long.